What if I told you you could be anywhere you want to be in just 3 years? It's true. By staying hyper-focused on your goals and purpose, you can make your vision a reality in just a few short years or even sooner. The trick is, you have to build the routine that will support you in getting there. The good news, we've already done the hard part for you. We created a free 5-minute morning routine tailored specifically to you. It's delivered straight to your inbox each morning, is designed to help you supercharge your mornings with clarity, focus, and inspiration. By committing to this 5-minute routine daily, you'll create total clarity on your purpose and goals, inspiration to help you build a lasting habit, and the life that you want in just 3 years. The best part, this tool is totally free. No strings attached, just valuable resources to help your inner and outer growth. So if you're looking for a short, easy morning routine that will help you, one, stay laser focused on your vision you have for your life, and two, help you make progress towards that vision every single day, head to adamhergenrother.com/future or visit the link in the show notes to create your future self today. Welcome to the 200% Life Podcast with Adam Hergenrother and Caitlin Frotlin, where we bring you weekly insights into spiritual growth and business success. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be jumping into how to choose your heart. What does that even mean? How to build emotional fitness through physical fitness. Why I choose physicality over meditation. And what really the future of work will be. And I sprinkle in some stories of my kids, of them choosing hard, and also getting real feedback in life from business and personal life. One of the really interesting things about feedback is, in at least, have you had parent-teacher conferences at all?
Two, yes.
So in my general experience with them is, unless there's a major issue, which generally, like, you kind of already know about, there is maybe a little bit of feedback in there about what they could be doing differently. But generally, it's, at least with my kids, it's been overall really positive. And I feel like, you know, you got 15 minutes or something like that, 20 minutes to get through them. So I get the fact that most teachers kind of want to get through them unless there's something that really needs to be addressed and I understand their issue. But for me, as I always kind of position myself to my kids as a coach, which is somebody that's always going to tell them what they hear, whether they really like it or not, or whether they don't want to hear it. I mean, that's how I want to show up for them in their life. And then they get to choose how they want to live and how they want to experience those things. And so one of the things I always ask for, and I've done this more recently than I have in the past, which is, okay, I know there's probably something wrong with my kid, right? Like, there just is. There's something wrong with all of us, right? Like, right. I mean, people could pick me apart, right? They could pick you apart. They could pick any one of us apart and tell us our faults and different things. It doesn't mean we're bad humans. It doesn't mean we're not great. It just means that there's always something to be coached on. There's all, I mean, whether you're Michael Jordan in his prime or you are Tiger Woods in his prime, they all had coaches all around them telling them where they could improve. Mm. So I basically said, I was like, tell me what's wrong with my kid. And I'm like, and kind of jokingly, then I said, where can they improve, right? Like, what can they do to improve? And one of my son, basically the feedback was, is he is very competitive. And he only likes to do things where he knows he's going to win. Mm-hmm. And so what it came from there is, like, he doesn't like to fail. And so he is in a situation where he will not choose to do something in math that potentially could affect his score, where he knows he takes the safe route and gets 100 to compare it to his friends so they can make sure that he's, you know, his grades are above different things. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, this is great, something I can work with. So I sat down and I had this conversation all about choosing your hard. Right, with my son, which was like, look, Asher, I said, I teach this in business. I just did this to our group. And I said, I'm going to do the same thing to you. And I do the same thing in my life, which is you're never going to duck pain, right? You're going to have pain from mediocrity or you're going to have pain from growth. And let me tell you, as a personal example, I fail a lot all the time. I make tough decisions all the time. And some of them don't work out. Some of them do. But I said, these are the decisions you have to learn how to fail forward. And the best advice I always got early on in my business was fail often, fail small, and fail as much as you can. My guess was fail often. Mm. And the reason why you say that is because it's not the, if you're afraid of, like, these mini failures, then you really put so much pressure on these big decisions. And if you don't understand failure, then you end up failing at a large level, like in terms of something you can't survive. In business building, specifically in contraction points, is all about surviving your mistakes. It's surviving your failures. So the faster you can fail, right, and feel that pain that you're going to go through, again, choosing your hard, is a way that you can really compound. And the way I always kind of like to phrase it, which is progress compounds, right? And that's how people should think of this. Progress always will compound, just like money will compound. And if progress is compounding, it's the reason how you get progress is through failure. And most of the failure comes from our progress you think about in your life. And so we had this conversation about it, and like we talked about in math specifically. And I also see this in other areas with him in sports, where he's really good at some sports and he likes to win those. And in other areas, like say it's more like longer endurance, he's not as good as his other friends. He'll naturally not want to do it as much. Mm-hmm. And so I brought that up to him and we just had the conversation. Then he's like, okay, I get it. And he can understand that. And then we can apply that into our life. But it's really like whether you're running a business or you're running a family or you're dealing with a loved one, there's always going to be an option, right? Which one do you mm-hmm. want to choose? Do you want to choose the pain of staying where you are of mediocrity, or do you want to choose the pain of failing each day, but using these as ways to grow? Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It sounds really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
it is, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we also, I think right now are in a moment specifically in real estate where people are get to choose their heart as well too, right? They get to come into this and basically say, do I want to lean into new changes, new regulatory environments? Do I need to lean into all this stuff? Or do I want to get stuck in how it should be, right? Because things are just going to change. It's the businesses that can fail forward often in small. So one of the first steps that I would kind of look at this is how do you fail often so that this becomes normal? Right. And this is one of the things that we did with our organization just last week, which is I want everybody to go find a heart. Because I think personally, if you fail physically or choose something hard physically each day, and again, it doesn't matter to me what it is. It's I'm just as impressed as somebody walking their first mile as somebody running a marathon, because they're both the same hard, right? Mm. They're different outcomes, but the hard is hard, right? It's hard for the person to walk their first mile. It's hard for for somebody to run their first marathon or any marathon. It's just, they're painful, especially around mile 18. And so when you choose a hard though, you start learning the mental fitness, the emotional fitness, because people always wonder like, how do I strengthen emotional fitness? How do I gain inner strength? And the way you do that is by putting yourselves and creating scenarios where you are forced to have inner strength. And the way I like to define this is just one step either, because I think it helps people, which is emotional fitness, self-mastery, whatever you want to refer to it as, is really overcoming the distractions and pulls that your mind will play and trying to fool you into not doing what you need to do so that you let go of the intended outcome that you have so it feels easier in the moment, right? So it's like self-mastery is another way of saying it's overcoming that voice inside your head that says no. Emotional resilience can be, you know, withstanding the pulls and distractions that the mind will cause to derail you from your goals.
So within the organization, you have encouraged people to choose something physically hard as almost like a training ground for some of the larger challenges that are facing the industry as a whole right now.
Whether you're a vertebrae, you're an insect, you're a creature, you're a human sapien, like every single species on this planet faces adversity. Mm. I mean, luckily we're not like the lizards. I gave this example. I always watch that Discovery show. You've seen that before?
Yeah.
Have you seen that one where it's like, yes, Literally all the lizards hatch and they have like 4.5 seconds to make it to the ocean or make it above this rock before 6,000 snakes eats them.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's wild.
Have you seen the one with the birds where they have to jump off? They hatch from their nest on a cliff and then they have to jump off the cliff and learn how to fly, and not all the birds make it, you know, but that's like their, you know, first day or first week of life.
Congratulations. Here you are. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's the other birds. I forget what they are. They actually live like 50 or 60 years. Do you remember what they're called? Probably in the show notes, but they are a special bird that has to sit on an island for 6 months and it can't fly because it's so heavy. I think it's around 6 months. And basically they have to wait for their parents to bring them food so they can get strong enough. And then it takes about approximately 6 months. They have to withstand predators. They have to be able to withstand the environment. Their parents have to come back and make sure they feed them for what it is. Anyways, it's 6 months of just relying on that. And so again, life is not supposed to just wake up and go, Caitlin, what do you want for life? And I'm going to make this as easy as possible for you. It just, that's not what life does. But that's so many of us suffer because in general, right? I'm generalizing this, but we wake up and we want life to be a certain way. I need to make a certain amount of money. I want a certain job. I want people to behave a certain way. I want my kids to act a certain way. I want them to be popular, but not too popular, right? I mean, we have all these conditions, right? That we've set for how life should be. And the reality is life doesn't care about any of that. Mm. And in fact, it wants you, it goes, if you're going to do that, I'm going to give you more adversity. And which is just, you want to call them problems, you want to call them challenges, whatever they are, they're just adversity. It's just challenges that are in life. You can call it a problem, doesn't matter to me. It is a problem. Okay, great. Then this is wonderful. But every time you solve the problem, when was there never not another problem? Every time you hit a certain goal or got rid of something that was a challenge and you're going, man, I really just need to get through this one set of things. And then we buy into this foolishness that somehow when we get through this, that I'm then going to be okay. Remember, there's nothing wrong with setting out a goal and saying, okay, here's a set of challenges or a set of adversity that we have to get through, right? There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, that's a wonderful strategy to do of how you're going to come up with a strategy and get through it. But just don't ever in the back of your mind or buy into this story that your mind's telling you that once I get through this, then we're going to be okay. Mm. That's the difference. Because once you get through it, you go, there might be a bigger one. It might be right there. It may come in a year, it may come in a day, it may come during while I'm doing this, right? I mean, you don't know, right? I mean, all of these challenges that are there. So one of the things that I think Navy SEALs have kind of taught us, which is you always fall back to the highest level of training that you have. Rarely do people rise up in an occasion. That's a fallacy, actually. Most people say, oh, you rise up in training or you rise up in a sport. And it's only because they prepared themselves to rise up. When I was doing half Ironmans and Ironmans, one of the things that my coach would always tell me is you're not going to go be some magical dude out there or dudess when you go out there and have your run, right? You are going to go out there and you are going to know, you're going to fall back to your highest level of baseline training. Basically, that's why they can predict with data now where you're pretty much, as long as everything goes relatively okay, you're going to have here's your time that's going to be on your Ironman, right? And they're within like 15 minutes of it because there's just not really. It'd be like, if you're running 8 minute miles in training, you're not going to go run a 6 minute mile, right? Mm-hmm. If you're running 9 minute miles in training, you may in a race run 8:30, 8:40, but you're not going to all of a sudden go to 8 minutes for the entire time. It just doesn't happen that way. So that's why the Navy SEALs or any type of training like this, you always fall back to your highest level of training. And within business, sure, we can train through those things, but why not set yourself up or set up situations each day where you're working on your inner strength and your emotional resilience? So then when the inevitable shows up, problem, adversity, challenge, when it shows up in life, personal, business, it's just life, right? When it shows up there, you're ready for it. And I'm not saying you're going to feel great about it, but you're at least ready for it. And then you can see clearly how you can actually handle this. And so that's why I, when you made that comment, is I like to challenge people in their own personal lives to find something physically hard. I just think it's the easiest place to start, right? I mean, business is going to happen, but when you can do it in your physical life, and again, you don't need to train all day for this. You don't need to set up a hell week like you go through Navy SEALs. It's just as I haven't exercised for 3 years. Great. Tomorrow morning, getting up half an hour early and walking a mile will be hard. It just will be hard for you. Or getting up 15 minutes early and doing 50 push-ups and 50 sit-ups is going to be hard. And the thing is, if you can just keep looking at, I got an email back from somebody that was doing this, and they said, I've always been doing 50 push-ups for the last while. And then when I got your challenge, I said, I'm going to do 300. And they go, I couldn't remember. He said, I didn't quite get 300, but I got really close to it and then maybe finished them throughout the day. And I go, and what his response was, I never know why I just kept stuck on 50. It would just became easy for me. And he goes, thank you for challenging me from there. I go, yeah, it's all mental. Because the next day he was able to just go out there and do 250, whatever it was, way more than he's been doing, only because he decided to. Mm-hmm. And this is where the benefit of, I firmly believe that 80% of success that we see in our outward life or even in our inner life all comes down to our psychology of how we approach this. This is why deep spiritual teachers really always reference the most important thing that matters the most is your intent. It's like, do you want to go through this personal growth, right? Or spiritual growth? Do you want to? Do you want to learn emotional resilience or there? Because if you do, the answers always show up, right? They really do. And that's why your intent has to be there. It doesn't mean everything's gonna be perfect. It doesn't mean it's gonna be the way you want it to, but the intent is there. I think it's the same thing. If you want to build emotional resilience in your life, you have to have the intent that, like, yes, I want to set up some things in my life to do it, which is, I think, the best way. If you look at most strategists or people that have succeeded, at least in the outward world, right? Because we're talking about that, because you can bring that in there, have mornings where they set up challenging things in their life. Again, some form of exercise, meditation. I mean, again, it's not always easy when you have 100 things going on to sit down and meditate, is it? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you, it's easy to meditate. I get it. But it's the fact of choosing to meditate when you've got kids yelling, somebody's already late, like, I've got 100 things to do in there, to actually stop. I used to tell people, used to say, like, the first part of meditation is just to recognize the voice inside your head. They go, I can't meditate, there's a voice inside my head. I actually think it's before that.
Yeah.
To me, it's actually the meditation is the fact of you recognize, I'm going to pause right now. And even though there's a thousand things, challenges, all these things going on, I'm actually going to stop and meditate. To me, that is the first sign of meditation.
Showing up is the hardest part.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it almost sounds like, too, it's so easy to push these things aside or say, oh, I'm just going to stick with the 50 sit-ups, push-ups because I can do it. And then I'm going to go on with my day. And like, the day is calling with long to-do lists, people to take care of, people to serve, whatever role you're in. And, but this moment sounds like it's almost, would you say it's the most important? I mean, it's because it's kind of the precursor for everything that follows in the day. Like, if you're building emotional resilience with your one hard thing that you're doing or whatever that is, it's then going to have that domino effect that affects everything else.
Yeah. To me personally, and again, this is just my personal opinion on this, even before meditation, for me, physicality is the most important thing for my day.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I can work on releasing throughout the rest of the day, right? Like, I think meditation's great. And I, and by the way, I still do it 99% of the time, twice a day. But if I had to choose, like, let's just give you this example of this. If I'm like flying out at 4 a.m, mm-hmm. I will choose physicality first before I choose meditation.
Wow.
And that's for me, because it for one, it calms, like, if I don't exercise, I can feel the anxiety build up in me. Like, it builds up and it's harder for me to stay centered. So in terms of for me, what's the one thing that I can do is always physicality, of getting that out there. I feel more prepared. And then I can always, like, then usually when I get on a plane, I can meditate. So that's like one thing I just kind of reverse the order that I do it. Typically when I wake up in the morning, 99% of my days, I meditate first, I journal, and then I exercise. But if I'm faced with making a decision, it's physicality first. And again, it's because if you're choosing that hard, it's not easy to just get up and then start moving your body when it's cold, when it's dark. It's like those type of things. It's when it's convenient to exercise, to me, it's just, you're just interested in it, right? And when I think Keith Blanchard said this quote, right? When it's convenient, it's like an interest. And then when you basically do it, I forget the way he describes it, it's like you've made a decision to do it, right? And so it's easy when it's sunny on a Sunday afternoon and you've got 3 hours lying around to go for a jog, right? But what about Monday morning when it's 4:30 in the morning and it's raining? Yeah. Like, that's your decision. And just doing it, forget about the outcome of like how fast you run it or what you do. It's getting out there and doing it. And I've never really, unless you're sick or something, I've never had a situation where after I've exercised, I felt worse. I actually always feel better. It calms my body, and then it gives me that ability, which is why I've always pushed physicality, because for me, it's always worked. And again, I think it works for 80, 85, 90% of the world that's out there, that if you exercise first or exercise part of your general weekly routine, I think it's important to do something weekly. Even like active recovery can be a walk. Active recovery can be a very light spin on your bike. It can be a stretching class. It can be a yoga class, or whatever it is for you. You can do some form of active recovery. And some people like having a day off. Anyways, I'm not gonna get the physical routines, but it's choosing something. Like, people get so complacent. And I don't mean complacent in a bad way. It's just they're choosing mediocrity. And you can also break this and expand it down to your relationships with your significant other. Right? Like, where are we at with that? How have I advance this, right? Where's my thinking flawed in what it is right now? Just like the example that I gave you early on with Asher, I was like, give me the feedback. And so when's the last time you went to your significant other and you chose a hard, which was, tell me something wrong with me. I actually want to know what's wrong with me. You know, the other example of this is, you know, my daughter, my oldest daughter is like kind of like, she loves being like just spontaneous, and she's not a super competitive. And so she always struggles in the area that we're in to like find her niche within her friend group. Like she's always kind of chasing them, right? Like, and nobody really like really includes her into a lot of things. And it kind of breaks your heart sometimes as like an adult, but she always tries to find her way to get in these different things. And she's pretty much good with when she's not. And I just kind of have these conversations with her. I'm like, one, you don't need to change of who you are. And as you are kind of building your first of all, you explain in larger scale that a lot of the things that are happening don't really matter later on in life. Mm-hmm. Right. And you get to choose your heart of being who you are, which is going to create short-term pain, but long-term going to give you progress in your life. And there's a really interesting study. I don't know if we can find it again, but it talked about how, like, I think it was like 80 or 83 or 84% of people that are what we would know for as we call them successful, like in our lives, like even people that are not even like people that have like also were like spiritual leaders, like at Eckhart Tolle or different examples like this. None of them actually had any friends in school. Like, the greatest example you give from like kids our age that I always use for kids is like Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. Like she talks about it openly, how she had no friends. She was a dork. She was really weird. Like she's open about it. And mm-hmm. she had nothing. Like she didn't have a friend group and she felt like alienated from the whole thing. And of course, you know, she's successful, whether that's Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, you've heard them all tell their stories about that. Even me personally, right? That was the same way. I was never really kind of in that group. And I think a lot of it is, and I was explaining this to my daughter, the point of the story I was sharing with this is part of, and this is what the article cites, is that a lot of times people that are really popular or they have it easier. And so there's no adversity. And so they don't actually grow during the school ages. And so therefore, and then they also conform. And so they kind of fall in line with like dogma, right? Mm-hmm. And like they, and then they never really, really grab for themselves. And sure, there should be examples of people that have been successful and done that, but the majority of people. And so I always explain it to her. I'm like, look, you don't want to fall into the way of other people's thinking. You don't want to just bend for somebody else. You want to be you. And then if that creates some initial adversity, that's wonderful because you're going to need to learn this skill in your entire life. And so it's kind of like choosing your heart. And that's where the point of I always explain. I'm like, you can either accept what it is with your friend group. You can change your friend group. You can just, or you can just interact with it knowing that it's going to be like this.
Hmm. That's fascinating. We're right now like choosing, looking at what schools to send our oldest to and everything. And just thinking about that really shifts the perspective around like, it's not, and I know we don't want our kids to face adversity, but those are some really great examples of like how something that we, even as parents, we can shy away from and be like, I don't want my kid to experience this pain, but choosing your heart at an earlier age can be more beneficial.
Yeah. And you actually bring that conversation to them.
Yeah.
Like, starting early. Like I know there's some parents of mine, they're wonderful friends. They love their kids to death, but they try to create scenarios where their kids never face adversity. Mm. And they will go to great lengths because they experience adversity in their life and they don't, or they're bullied at some level, and bullying's different. I'm not talking about like actual bullying, right? The definition of bullying, that's a whole other concept. That should be stopped. I'm talking about like different level, like those kind of examples that I gave you. And part of the conversation is like, look, like you're making it too easy for your kids. And again, I'm not going to get into a parenting thing here. The point of sharing that story is like, even though it hurts your heart as a parent, kids need to go through that. Mm-hmm. They need, to me anyways, they need to go through. That's also why I love sports and I'm so involved with teaching and coaching sports, because you get a lot of adversity in sports. And that's one flavor of it. But I also think, you know, you got to bring that over in other aspects of your life, for whatever it is.
To backtrack a little bit here too, talking about how it's like there's this complacency. Like I think there is almost like an egoic trap where we can be like, oh, I wake up and I do my meditation every morning. And I mean, I'm speaking for myself here, and like little pat on the back and I go on with my day. But the hard thing would actually be choosing to get up and do push-ups yep. or whatnot. And so it's like, at one point, the hard thing was the meditation, yes. but it's not the hard thing anymore.
Exactly.
So questioning and asking yourself, am I doing something hard?
Yes.
And I guess it has to be a reoccurring question yes. that you're asking yourself yeah. routinely.
Well, it's like, it's again, imagine if you learn 2 + 2 and then never learn multiplication. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really like, okay, I'm in second grade. I learned second grade and it was hard. Now I'm in fifth grade, but I want to do second grade math. And I use kids as an example because I just live it every day. And this is what, it's almost like they're like, oh, now I have to do this in math, right? Like, and it's like, yeah, because you already know that. They go, yes, I know that. I don't need to use it. I go, it doesn't matter whether you're ever going to use this algebraic form. And I get it. Maybe there should be some structure down. But for now, and you're not doing it, you're now facing a new challenge, a new way of thinking. And can you bring that in there? Forget about the answer, whether you're going to use the fact that you have to do a derivative. Sure, you probably will use a calculator. But there's bigger benefits that you're missing out on this, which is you're now learning something new, but you're also working through it. I'll give you this another great example. This is, I always wanted to learn more about 3D printing because it's just been something fascinating. I think it's, I just saw that they just completed their first ever subdivision in Austin, Texas, using nothing but 3D printing,
wow.
which is wild. You can go look it up, Google it. You can see it in there in Austin, Texas. They had their first ever built residence division, which I think 3D printing, again, this is my long-term theory or view on this is that things themselves, anything that we have, you know, houses, cars, boats, planes, literally at some point will get so efficient that you can have any of them you want. Mm-hmm. You literally will have, you want a Ferrari, you want a boat, you want a bigger house, you'll be able to have it. Land, I don't know yet, because land's one of the things that, like, do we create land in different categories? At some point, maybe, right? Are we, you know, whatever that is. But until foreseeable future, I think the things that most of us work for to try to get, to have, to pay for our house, pay for these different things, will be so cheap that we won't really need to work. Which is why I think that jobs, this generation, call it a hundreds of years, whatever you want to refer to it as, they'll look back at this in maybe 100 years, 150, maybe 200, maybe 50, I don't know, maybe 30, and go, do you remember all the, imagine having the work? Imagine, could you imagine having the work? And they'll be like, I don't know how people lived. I'm serious, like, because, you know, and I actually just read this thing in Morning Brew the other day where they're talking about the, you know, the founders of OpenAI and Elon Musk, and all of them actually share the same sentiment. Mm. Even to the point where, you know, Bernie Sanders, who happens to be in Vermont, is trying to promote a 32-hour work week. Whether you like it or not, that's not the point. But what he's citing is that AI is making everything so efficient that people can actually get everything they need to be done and changing the standard work week from 40 to 32. And basically, you could do it in 3 12-hour days. You could do it in 4 days and give more people. Everyone has a different opinion on that. And that's, I bring it up purely because you're now seeing it brought into legislature of saying, AI is so efficient. And then they cite the guys that are working on OpenAI and different things saying at some point in the really near future, people won't have to work because everything will be so efficient and you'll be able to have everything. So anyways, we have this 3D printer and it's wild. First of all, I had to set it up and it was frustrating because I'm not really good at setting those things up, but I sat there and did it and got it working. Have you ever used one before?
No.
You take like a filament and like you can change the colors out, you can change it and you put it in there and like you put it through a computer program and it basically just builds it. Like you could build this cup.
How does it get the material?
Like it's called filament and it's like a hard, durable plastic and they can change different material. You can get different filament.
So you couldn't make like a ceramic mug, but you could make a mug out of...
There's probably filament that is very similar to ceramic.
Okay.
Maybe not ceramic, but just like you can make that plastic. You can make that steel, right? It's just... Actually, I don't know about steel, but like you can make things that basically can be heated up. Can't steel be heated up? Right. And like, and then transformed, isn't that what they do with wrought iron? So, I mean, it's like 220 degrees when it comes out and it's so hot and then it shapes it into whatever it is. And it's in 40 minutes, you can have a ski, like a little, like a foot long ski with a boot on it and it moves.
Wow.
That's, and it just does the whole thing for you.
Wow.
And you're seeing that and you're going, dude, this was $500.
Is there like is there fabric in the boot? Like, or is it like the shell of the boot? And then you would need to do something like,
Yeah, I think you would use the shell of the boot, but it's just, you know, this thing is $500 and it's making pretty much anything. You like my son made like these watch holders for iPads and it would look like you had bought them in a store.
Wow.
Like if somebody had came down and said, I bought this on Amazon, I would not have thinking differently. And if you're getting, if you're using a 3D printer, you understand what I'm saying. And then they just get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? As this technology becomes cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, everyone will have one like in their garage and like, you're like, oh, you want a new lacrosse stick? Great. Boom. Like they just going to print it out. And like, cause that's all plastic. Right. And then like, and they're like, oh, you want a 3D printing for a string and they're going to have a string 3D printer. Right. So you're just going to have all these things. It's going to be so efficient. Right. And even if you had to buy some of these other items or somebody give it to you, they'll be so cheap because they can make them for nothing and that's again, the point of like, you're seeing it as legislature. You're seeing it with OpenAI, people seeing this that are much, much smarter, beyond me and smarter than I am in terms of in that world of 3D printing and OpenAI and how intelligent it is. I don't know, did you see that new one that got released called Devin?
No.
There's a new OpenAI, I think it's, I could be wrong on this, I think it's Microsoft's Devin is what they're calling it, D-E-V-I-N. And it's basically a OpenAI that then trains other OpenAIs inside. So it's basically training of the OpenAI's trainer, and it knows whether or not you're asking it a fake question or a fool question, and now it's building like a whole repertoire of like people basically, and it's now coaching those people, and then it's building more people
AI based on, intelligence
not real people
but
like actual, like it's building the bots and then managing the bots to fulfill the jobs. I mean, it's like I forget that they were saying how much more effective it was than like, it was some astronomical number of how much more it could produce than like a human being working a 40-hour work week.
Or so, training AI for that matter too.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So again, like we can move away from the depth of AI. My only point of saying that is that we're going to look back at some generation and say, do you remember when you had to work?
Yeah. When you said 30 years, I was like, no. But I mean, when you combined 3D printing and AI and
I mean, think about just the last 20 years where we've come.
It makes me think about Amazon as a business model because obviously Jeff Bezos is very smart in looking at this, but Amazon is totally built on people's need to buy items.
Yes.
So.
Well, and maybe people still buy it. Again, I think people are starting to buy things, but I think it's just produced so cheaply. That's the difference, right? It's like, do you remember when TVs at one point were like 20 grand for a 75-inch screen TV?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they were, what, 25, 30,000, maybe even, I could be wrong. It could have been when they first came out, there were some astronomical number for a 75-inch screen TV.
Yeah.
And now you have curved LCD, the highest picturesque that you can have, and they're like $300.
Yeah.
I mean, the cost of them, maybe they're not 300, but you can buy a 75-inch screen TV for under $500 now. And they're so cheap. Mm-hmm. And they're better than the highest quality one that was ever there.
Yeah.
The speed at which these things and how it's just, again, like how cheaper things are getting. So I think that's just the direction of what we are.
We digress. Back to choose your heart. Yeah.
So again, so the purpose of this is so, and one of the things, here's what I would take away, right? From like your inner takeaways from this, which is, there's outward gain that you get from using physicality. And I think there's an inner gain that you get from physicality. For me, the inner gain is it settles me down to allow myself to stay more centered, to do more relaxing and releasing, allowing the emotion to come through versus if I don't exercise, it's harder for me to stay centered. So it's benefit. And then from the physicality standpoint, you obviously get physical benefits. You get drips of dopamine. You get smarter and you're choosing your heart. You're finding something harder. And I thought you brought up a really good point, which is anybody listening to this, no matter what you're doing, you may have the perfect routine. You may have not even started. But one thing you can do is you can add something that's harder today. And you can do it at the same time. So maybe your workout is 30 minutes and you've been on the treadmill doing the same thing for the last 2 years. Why don't you go out there today and maybe you don't run, but maybe you put the incline to 11 for 5 minutes, right? Maybe you go and you, between your runs, you get off it and you do 100 pushups and get back on a run. Or maybe you run at 2 miles per hour more or 0.2 miles per hour faster. Everyone can just elevate their heart. Doesn't have to be more time. It just means you're constantly putting yourself in a situation where it forces you to choose to increase your emotional fitness, which again, no matter what, where the world goes and whatever happens in your business and personal life, the more emotional fitness you can have, the inner strength you can have, the better you'll be able to solve problems and handle reality and just be a better human being.
So inner takeaway today is ask yourself, where can I add something hard into my life?
Yes.
And outer is execute on it.
Perfect. Love it.